Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. CWE.net.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should it be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he? Oh.
Now, very happy to say, to look back on this rather strange and hopefully unique year, we are joined by Philippe Auclair. Philippe, hello.
Hello to you.
I really do hope this has been a unique year in our lives. I can't face another one. Not yet. Not now.
No.
So
it can only get worse, so don't worry.
So it's that time of year, I guess, where we look back and we asked you to pick out a few things which struck you or caused you happiness or caused you dismay or sadness or any of the other emotions that football tends to bring. So the floor is yours. I have the list you sent on. So we can start anywhere you like. I mean, you mentioned a few things, a number of passings, some big names passed on. There's French football in a bit of trouble. Good news stories include Bielsa, Lewandowski. You've picked your teams of the year. And then, you know, one thing, actually, I had forgotten this, you know, when we're thinking about the year that was, and not many people will mention this. So let me mention it before I hand over to you totally, and then I'll follow your lead.
Go on.
UEFA and Man City and CAS and financial fair play. This, you know, this was the year where we thought, OK, a big name is going to get its comeuppance. Yeah. And I mean, I did pieces on this. I may well have spoken to you at the time and I've completely forgotten already.
I know, and the extraordinary thing as well is that when, you know, the non-event happened, as in Cass said, oh, guys, you waited too long to file this. Oh, there's a statute of limitation, so we can't deal with it. Oh, really, all this for nothing? It was in July. I mean, that's the thing, is that it was July. It's less than 6 months ago. It feels like it was a lifetime ago that this happened. But yes, you're quite right. And I think it was actually one of the major events on a global scale in certainly in football governance, because the paper tiger had roared basically and had been scrunched by a few lawyers and been thrown in the bin. And you're wondering after what happened with PSG in the past, what's happened with Man City, just exactly where this financial fair play didgeridoo is going to go. Because to be honest, I think that when it comes to the substance of the case, actually, as was shown afterwards as well, there was certainly a lot for Manchester City to answer for. But, you know, the law is the law, and UEFA didn't prepare its case properly or didn't look in it carefully enough, and they got away with it. And also Nasser Al-Khelaifi of PSG got away with it. Remember, he had this court case in Switzerland with the former Secretary General of FIFA, Jérôme Vargue, and for a similar reason, you know, he got off. So it's been a strange year in that, yeah, I'd forgotten myself about it, like you, up until like, oh, you know, a light on the other side, the other aisle of the manor house where I live in comfort, paid by football magazines. A light was switched on and thought, yes, Manchester City, we'd completely forgotten about this one. I'm pretty sure we'll forget about 100 dozen other things, because I think we've lost track of time. I think we've lost track of what a month is, a week is, a season is. But, you know, we'll give it our best shot. Mm-hmm. And actually, to give a best shot to 2020 is exactly what I want to do. I want 2020 to get shot off, really.
And to jog people's memories, because we all had a lot going on this year, the CAS Manchester City situation, it was actually quite simple. You know, we had anticipated this would be legal jargon and this would be a really delicate, nuanced, tricky case. But to put it in layman's terms, it was almost as simple as the Court of Arbitration for Sport saying to UEFA, you know, you got a pretty good case here, but actually you've missed the deadline to file the case. So finito, over, Man City, off you go. That's kind of the gist here. It's not actually much more complicated than that.
To be honest, it was very much the gist of it, astonishingly enough. And I think that what was really surprising is that some of my good friends who had followed this story and actually had been part of the story for quite a while, nobody had seen it coming. And afterwards, we were talking to each other thinking, come on, we should have predicted this. We should have seen that there was a problem with the time limit, because usually we see these sort of things. And I think we were blinded by what we thought was the hugeness of the case, because obviously we were expecting something like, okay, the two-season ban is going to cut to one, something like that, which is already going to be very interesting. Because remember at the time, remember what Kevin De Bruyne was saying at the time. He was saying, well, if it's 1 year, that's okay. If it's 2 years, that might be a bit of a problem. You were thinking, oh gosh, what about Pep Guardiola as well? I mean, is he going to stay in a club which is not in the chair? And all this for nothing.
Poof.
Nothing happened. Yes, pff, exactly. Yeah.
And they both signed contract extensions in the last couple of weeks. De Bruyne just today. So a final point on that then. Is your sense that this means financial fair play is somewhat dead in the water, or because it was such a simple cock-up on UEFA's part, will it just be a simple case of, well, next time let's make damn sure to hit the deadline, and so financial fair play still has teeth?
Well, the problem is that what the case of Manchester City related to events which obviously took place quite a while ago, 4 or 5 years ago, clubs have wised up to financial fair play in a way that they hadn't at the time, perhaps. I think the mechanics and the processes they're using to be, you know, within the parameters defined by financial fair play are much more subtle. And the other thing you've got to think about is that financial fair play is somewhere in a bin being transferred to, you know, some kind of hole in the ground because of the pandemic, because UEFA obviously had to change all the rules. And for how long, we don't know. But basically, the regulations which were in place have been, there's a kind of stay of execution in a way. They've been pushed back. You know, we'll be talking about two seasons in one. We're basically delaying everything. We're, when I'm talking we being UEFA, we're basically allowing clubs to have investment coming in, which will compensate for the losses created by coronavirus. And in which case we're talking about tens and hundreds of millions in some of the bigger clubs, which means it's going to be totally impossible to, I mean, those COVID years are going to be, I think, I'm afraid, a free for all for some. There'll be plenty of ways to go around and to explain that, well, we had to put this money in because this, because that, because we lost $120 million or pounds or euros in ticket sales. We have to do this, so therefore we are having money taken in, brought in by our investors, our owners, and it would be perfectly legit, which, by the way, is normal. You don't want the clubs to go bankrupt. And but this means that already the financial fair play process was in jeopardy. And I think with COVID, we can look at a completely new set of rules coming in, you know, in a couple of years' time or something like that. But no, the current system is shot.
Mm. You jotted down in your message, Lewandowski. We should touch on Lewandowski.
Yeah. Well, I've been a member of the sports desk of France Football for a very long time. I mean, 22 years now. And so we are the Ballon d'Or magazine. So we do not choose the Ballon d'Or, but we organize the vote. And this year the decision was taken not to have a Ballon d'Or because we thought it would be unfair. Some competitions stopped, some leagues stopped, like for example, the French league stopped for good. The Dutch league stopped, the Belgian league stopped. You thought, well, it's got to be fair. So you cannot judge players fairly if some of them could do their job and others couldn't. which seems like a good explanation to me and a good justification. But if I were Robert Lewandowski, I would feel very, very disappointed. He's not, quite clearly, he's not somebody who holds a grudge, because he's given us a big interview for our last edition of the year. It's a kind of honorary Ballon d'Or, but basically he would have had it. It's actually, and he would have been a magnificent Ballon d'Or as well, and a proper Ballon d'Or, like not a super mega star, you know, who is as well known by non-football fans as he is by football fans, but somebody who has reached a peak late in his career, as actually quite a few centre forwards have done in the past, and has shown that he was able to almost reinvent himself, to be that he was able to tailor his game to the needs and of various managers who have quite different ideas as to which tactics they should be using. Well, he's smart, he's absolutely lethal with left, right foot header. He is also built, I don't know, out of concrete. This man is almost never injured, has huge physical presence. His movement is better than ever. His sense of where to be in the box to create the most danger is as acute as ever, probably more acute than ever. He is one of the most complete, I mean, he's the most complete center forward we have in the world at the moment. And he was a shoe-in, honestly, for the Ballon d'Or. So I feel quite sorry for him. And also I feel quite sorry because it would have been a way to also, through him, reward an absolutely magnificent team, which nobody was expecting to be at this level throughout. And of which he's been one of the symbols, you know, along with Thomas Müller or Serge Gnabry or Joshua Kimmich, of course, and others. But he was really the, I don't know, I mean, he's, it was one of those years when you saw that Bayern were leading 3-1 somewhere. Said, oh, two of those goals are by Lewandowski. Aren't they? And sure enough, they were.
Yes.
I've actually lost count of how many goals is he at the moment. Do you have his stats for the year? I mean, it's just prodigious. It defies. And please, people should say, oh, it's only the Bundesliga where the defenses are not very good. My goodness, he scored in every competition. He's just, at the top, absolute top of his game. And who cares if he does some silly dance moves and things like that? We don't care about that.
Well, their demolition, Bayern's demolition of clearly flailing Barcelona was one of the more thrilling nights, you know, one of the more thrilling stories of the year. It was incredible. So who is your team of the year then?
Well, funny enough, you've just mentioned its name and it's not Barcelona. I mean, it's a fight between obviously Liverpool for domestic reasons and Bayern Munich. But if you look at the greater scheme of things, I would say Liverpool were my favorite for the title at the beginning of the 2019-2020 season, a long time ago. They were my favorite. Bayern certainly were not my favorite for anything. They were in a very strange place where they had named a manager who'd been basically an assistant, a kind of Mikel Arteta all through his life. I exaggerate when I say that. But is the guy that we knew his face. Oh, we've seen this face before. Oh, yes, we saw him sitting next to Joachim Löw on the German bench. And you thought, you know, let's remember what we were saying about Bayern Munich at the time. We thought that they were an aging team, that there was on one hand very young players and aging, you know, older players, that there was a gap in there somewhere. We thought that quite a few of them were past their best. We thought that there was genuine unrest within the dressing room, that some people were a bit too big for their boots, which is a bit typical for FC Bayern. We had questions about Lewandowski. How long can he carry on like that? Thomas Müller, is he finished? You can carry on like that. People were questioning the recruitment. And nobody could foresee that they would have a season like the season they had, playing the kind of football they had, which was absolutely thrilling, which is also the other thing. We used to a Bayern that surprises us from time to time and wins everything in sight. Can you remember as thrilling a Bayern side as this one? I can't. I genuinely can't. And I've been thinking about it. And the Guardiola side was very, very good, but sort of just failed short in Europe, certainly, and didn't quite have the same thrilling and risk-taking approach. The Heinkes team was great to watch and had some superb player, but didn't quite have the same intensity. And again, the same it didn't give the same thrill, which, you know, we talk about the demolition of Barcelona. I would say that the demolition of PSG, even though the scoreline is not the scoreline of a demolition, was even more thrilling because you think, how on earth can you accept taking such risks all the time against some of the best forwards on the planet, or so we are told? And they did it, and they believed in it, they went through it, and they won. And yes, there was no doubt about it at all. So for the results, for the surprise, for the quality of the play, and for some exceptional players, and Thiago Alcantara, how could I not mention him? But especially, my favorite, one of my pet footballers, Thomas Müller. It's just so wonderful to see this.
Yes.
He's a genius in a different way. He belongs to a different dimension. He's not a normal footballer. He doesn't look like a footballer. He doesn't play football like a footballer. No. Technically, he's not the best player. Physically, he's certainly not the strongest player. Is he the most intelligent player there's ever been? I don't know. I don't know. It's just he's pure football. So it was thrilling to see him being rewarded as well. So, you know, FC Bayern. Good on my. I hope Raphael Honigstein is listening to this. He's going to be incapable to contain himself. Listen to me thinking about his team like that.
I only hope we get Liverpool back to the peak of their powers, playing that thrilling brand of football, and Bayern still playing that thrilling brand of football. And you know what? You'd say you'd like it in the final. I'll take it over two legs. I want two helpings of it. That'd be something.
Oh yeah. And with no extra time, no penalties, so there has to be replays.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a game I could watch every week for a couple of years.
I think so. It might be a very cagey game for all I know, because
I have my doubts.
Yeah, I have my doubts too. I'm just saying that just there. But it would be, let's be fair, it would be absolutely wonderful to have two of the dominating teams of their year. Now, the question is, can they be the dominating teams of our era? Is the question that you've got to ask yourself. And in the case of Liverpool, which of course is silver medal in this particular awards ceremony, is that they seem to have a knack to buy the right players at the right price at the right time to replace. They seem to have this capacity to compensate for. I mean, I'm astonished what they're doing at the moment, you know, and not having their captain, who was supposed to be exceptional, who is exceptional. He's not supposed to be, he's exceptional. And the thing I thought as well is that when they lost Virgil van Dijk, I thought, oh dear. But I thought, okay, that might be a chance for Thiago Alcantara to, because Virgil van Dijk in a way is a quarterback. And a lot of the play of Liverpool was Virgil van Dijk just like bringing the ball 5 yards ahead of him and then pinging those 50 yards passes to Alexander Arnold, Robertson, Mane, Salah, whoever, with unerring precision, a la Beckenbauer. Now, I was thinking, if they don't have him, none of the other centre-backs that Liverpool has the same capacity to find teammates with such unerring accuracy. But they've got Thiago, so which means now that they've got one of the supreme passers in the game, they will go through him. So Liverpool is going to play a shorter kind of game, because before that, with Virgil van Dijk, they were, I think, on average, the team which played the most long passes in the Premier League. And they lose Thiago. Then you think, okay, well, they've got Jota, he's scoring all these goals. Oh, then they lose Jota. You think that, how do you deal with this? And you produce not just his results, but this quality of play, that you were able to scrap results despite playing badly is something that they've done for 2 years already. But being able to produce that kind of football, which we saw again recently with Minamino starting, Oxlade-Chamberlain coming back, Mo Salah on the bench, wow.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. And if we could see those two, you know, that together would be brilliant. And again, yes, is it the beginning of an era of dominance by those two? I think it's a bit more of a problem of renewal for Bayern than perhaps there is for Liverpool. We'll see. I mean, you know, they're quite clever as well in the way they recruit their players, but they do need to look at, they need a few maybe younger players in defense in particular. And Lewandowski is not eternal. I hope he'll prove me wrong on that, but I don't think he is.
If you're just tuning in, we are chatting with Philippe Auclair, regular voice in the show over the year, about the year that was. So we have touched on the debacle of UEFA at CAS in the Manchester City case. Bayern and Liverpool are teams of the year in Philippe's view, Bayern by a nose. Lewandowski, the Ballon d'Or winner that wasn't.
Yeah.
So quite a few departures, as there is every year. I mean, that's the nature of life, I suppose. And increasingly, more and more people were famous from TV. So just more and more famous people are going to die, I suspect. So the ones which kind of made an impact over here, you sent a lengthy list, actually, but ones which registered here were Julia and Maradona, of course. Jack Charlton was big during the summer here for obvious reasons. Paolo Rossi, Nobby Styles. Any of those departures or others have a profound effect on you or strike you for any reason, Philippe?
Well, I mean, two of the people I mentioned when I was talking to our friend JP before the show were people who were friends of mine. So obviously, yes, I have that's one of the reasons why I hate this year. I mean, Jarouille was somebody whom I had a lot of affection, love, even and respect for.
Philippe? Sorry,
Gerard.
Oh, Gerard Houllier. Sorry, my uncultured Irish ear misheard your Gerard quite badly. So Gerard, okay. Yes. Yeah, okay, I'm with you now, Gerard.
Yes. So, but also his former assistant Jacques Crevoisier was an absolutely delightful man and a very good friend. So, yes, it's been and way before their time. And then, yeah, you can carry on like that. I mean,
could I ask you on Julia, Philippe? We all knew how ill he was, obviously, from his Liverpool days and taken ill at halftime. And I think he actually did potentially die on the surgery table and made a great recovery. Yeah. Was it Gerard Houllier's sense that he was always on borrowed time? After that, did he live with that weight or that ticking clock over his shoulder, do you know?
I think that he was aware of it, that he cheated death in a way. I know that a few of his close friends, like Phil Thompson, for example, had talked to him about that specifically. I never broached the subject directly with Gerard. But yes, of course, and he had been frail for a while. I mean, it's not something, he never fully recovered. You know, the comeback against Roma, the famous comeback against Roma, the hug with Fabio Capello and Liverpool winning 2-0, an extraordinary story, but a story which perhaps was not the right one. It should have waited a bit longer. There were doubts. I think he asked himself the question whether he had done the right thing going to Villa, not because he didn't enjoy his time there or like the people he met there, not at all, but because for health reasons. And his health had been declining, you know, over the years. But, you know, I saw him in London not that long ago and with his wife Isabel, and he was tired. He was showing his age, but, you know, he was still... There was no sign that, you know, he was in a really bad way, but unfortunately, you know, the last operation was the fatal one. So, yes, I mean, I he probably knew he was a very incredibly sensitive man, hypersensitive even, and obviously a very, very smart, intelligent man. He knew that he cheated death. He knew that he was, but like all of us, that he was. You know, we say en sursis in French, an expression which doesn't have a real ready translation. We're basically in the antechamber all the time, and he knew it perhaps better than others. But what a fantastic life he had, and that's which is the consolation, is that he knew how cherished he was, he knew how loved he was. He achieved an awful lot in his career with things that he would never have dreamt of when he was, you know, a young teacher spending a year and also comprehensive teaching football and seeing his first Liverpool game. And France became a world champion in part thanks to him, to his work in the background. He made Liverpool, well, be Liverpool again and kickstarted the renaissance of the club. And he did so many other things as well. So he was a French champion with PSG and a different PSG. So, and especially you've heard all the... tributes that were paid to him, I can tell you all of them were sincere. And to deserve such tributes, you have to be an exceptional man, and he was an exceptional man. We'll miss him. I'll miss him a great deal, I can tell you that. Mm. And it's been, I mean, it seems like also, it's not just like football people who've left, but also very good football people. Michel Hidalgo was a wonderful man who took France to, you know, he was the manager of the great 82 team, 84 team, 86 team. Robert Herbin, who was one of the quite extraordinary character, former Saint-Etienne player and manager, a great lover of classical music, quite a guy. Bruno Martini, the French keeper, was also very much loved within French football. Papa Bouba Diop, perhaps the saddest story of them all. I mean, to think that such a magnificent footballer could fall the victim of this awful disease and die so young. And then we can carry on. I see in Nobby Stiles, of course, Hans Tilkowski, Alejandro Sabella, Paolo Rossi. I mean, and Robbie Rensenbrink, who was one of my childhood heroes. So it's been an absolutely awful year. And to be honest, I don't think I can remember one in which, I mean, there have been years of disasters and years of tragedies when, like 1958, or when a single catastrophe has you know, brought the whole football family to its knees, so to speak, or the crash of the Zambian national team airplane, things like this is different. It's like it felt like it was hitting left, right, and center. Mm. And hitting where it hurts the most, and I'm forgetting a few names, obviously, but I think very few of our clubs and national teams have been spared by the very grim Reaper in 2020. There you go, and of course Diego. But what can we say about that?
Well, yeah, not much to add there.
No.
So before the clock comes too much against us, you had, I'll let you choose what you want to touch on here. You had mentioned that given the Media Pro situation, the money in TV, the French league is potentially in trouble. You had mentioned Bielsa and Leeds.
Yeah.
And you'd mentioned PSG. So what do you want to go to?
Well, I think perhaps we should be a little bit more, finish on those. Up a little bit.
Yes, there's people driving home for Christmas as they listen, or else, unfortunately, driving home to lockdown.
French football is on the edge of a precipice, that's a fact. We'll talk about it later. Mm. PSG being PSG is almost funny in some ways. But I think the feel-good story, regardless you like Leeds United or not, and I would imagine quite a few people are not so fond of Leeds United as a club. Don't know why. But my goodness, he's done it again. That's what you can say. He's done it again. And how he does it, nobody knows. It's not spying on Derby County, which is giving his players like Hugh Dallas or Luke Ayling, who are suddenly playing like Cafu and Roberto Carlos, or Jack Harrison, who is just, I don't know, I absolutely love him. And nobody whacks the ball harder than Jack Harrison. I don't know why. He just loves to whack it. Even when he's crossing, he loves to whack it. And I love a whacked ball. And you look and there's so much invention in there. Rafinha was a great catch, by the way. I thought that was a really, really good one to get. But they've been, you know, Leeds had tried other ways to go up, get back to the big time, and had failed. And it's worked with a manager who is a risk taker. And I know there's been a debate, if you can call that a debate, argument rather, raging on Twitter about would you have Bielsa as your manager? And my answer is, of course, because it's exactly why I'm a football fan. I don't know what to expect, but I can expect the best. That's the thing. I know the best is possible. I can also get thrashed 6-2 and, you know, and being led, you know, 6-1 and still going for the goal, which they got. And this is beautiful. And to see, I think part of the pleasure for me is to see, validation, perhaps even that, of Bielsa's football in an English context is a wonderful thing, because people always say the same thing about Bielsa. They always say that the gold medal with the Argentinian team really doesn't matter. The titles in Argentina, pff, who cares? And actually, he didn't achieve much. You know, if you know, his Chile team was great, but did this. His Athletic team was great, but failed, and ultimately failed, and so forth. And you think, well, yes, yes, but no, because look at what he's been working with, and he carries on doing that, and suddenly brings back, and. That's the one thing I'm happy that is at least is because of the white shirt. This is a football which is made to be played in white shirts. Mm. I mean, could you imagine, and nobody's done it yet, could you imagine a Real Madrid with the players they've got having a Bielsa at their head? Mm. He would sort them out PDQ, I would imagine. Even put him, you know, I don't know, put him with any team. It would be great fun. Put him with Arsenal. You wouldn't recognize Arsenal within 2 weeks. So it's a great... For people like me who've always have admired him for a very long time, it's been a marvelous validation of his philosophy and the fact it can be successful. How it's going to end, we don't know. But one thing is sure is that Leeds were not in as good a place as they are now when he arrived at the club. And that when he arrived at the club, remember how people said that it would self-combust. You know, remember how people, even in the promotion season, were saying, because there was, they always hit the wall at one point, and they did hit a wall, or we thought they'd hit a wall. And people were starting to say, oh, look at Bielsa, always the same thing. Two thirds of the season, fantastic. Last third, they're on their knees. They can't, yeah. No, they got it. They went past the line. And they're really bringing so much to the table. I hope they stay sat at it for a very long time. And I hope that, you know, he stays around and perhaps gets a chance at a really big club. But maybe, you know, I should stop because when I start with Bielsa, I could carry on for forever. But in a way, the kind of football which he asks his team to play, in which the sense of sacrifice is huge. You've got to run yourself into the ground for your partners and your teammates. And there are no exceptions to that. If you don't do it, you won't be in the team, no doubt. But the players believe it. Now, could it work with a squad of players who are much more, shall we say, sure of their ways, who are not like Ayling and Dallas, coming from a fairly modest football background, or even Harrison, actually? I don't know. Maybe, yeah. Maybe it wouldn't work. I mean, Klopp is doing something of the kind, playing a, not as, it's incredible. Klopp cannot actually match the intensity of Bielsa's football. Yeah. But he's doing something of the kind, so it's possible, but you need to be an extra special man manager, extra special manager, full stop. Mm. But in any case, let's enjoy it while we can. There haven't been many things to be happy about in 2020, but this was definitely one of them. Long may it continue.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing. So, well, let's, before I bid you farewell and wish you a happy Christmas, to ask the most cliched of questions, and I suspect every radio show you listen to for the next week or so will be doing something similar. But I am curious, Philippe Auclair, what has living through this year done to you? In what way has it impacted you, if at all? Maybe it hasn't changed you at all.
It's changed an awful lot. It's been the thing, you know, everybody will have. I mean, there are people who have had a far tougher year than me. Tens of thousands of people in the country where I live, who've lost people who are part of their family. But I lost a number of friends this year. So it's been, and young friends sometimes. So it's been, I mean, I'll use the word, it's been a shit year, and I can't wait for it to be over. And I wish us all good luck, basically.
Okay. Well, on that note, good luck. Philippe Auclair, thanks again. We'll talk in 2021.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. New normal, same old football. Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, welcome back. So let's check in with a footballer who's had an interesting year. Formerly of Arsenal, now of Fiorentina. Louise Quinn. How you doing, Louise?
Hi, Joe. How's things?
Yeah, all good. Nice to check in with you. So you have had an interesting year. You made the trek home, by the way, for Christmas. Funny time to be travelling. Was it all okay-ish? Hold your breath half the time? And
No, the travel back was fine. We got a bit used to some of those scenarios with the, you know, with the national team, and knowing how to, you know, to really operate in those ways. So yeah, it was really, really straightforward, thank God.
So tell us, I don't think we've talked too much since the move. How has it been?
Yeah, it's been definitely a change. A change of, in every way, change of lifestyle, change of football, change of the style. Yeah, really a change of everything, and something that I've really kind of had to adapt to. You know, and probably the biggest kind of source of adaptation I've really had in a long, long time. And you know, but I really do feel myself now, you know, finally kind of settling into it a lot better. You know, obviously the language can be definitely one of those problems as well. But yeah, it's starting to get a grip of that now, thankfully.
Are you? So you're getting lessons and all that jazz, yeah?
We're getting some lessons, yeah. And pretty much everything is in Italian. And I've really noticed maybe the last month that the girls, they love to chat to you, but they will only talk to me in Italian at the moment. And very reluctantly kind of go into the English, but they just know it's the best way to learn and the best way to go about it. And but no, they're a great bunch, and sure, they're only trying to speed up the process, I think.
Yes, they're being cruel to be kind.
Exactly.
Where are you living then? Are you in city centre in Florence, which I hear is just an amazing place? Are you living on the outskirts, or are you on your own? Have you got company? How's all that working out for you?
Yeah, I literally live just outside the city. So I live along quite kind of a famous street known for a few of its restaurants and shopping as well, kind of the local shop. So Via Gioberti. So for me, I would have a 5-10 minute cycle to get into like the main parts of the city now, which are all the way in. I could stop off in every second place and get a coffee or get a pastry, which I tend to do quite often as well, which needs to maybe, I haven't kind of gotten over that that buzz yet. But no, the city is absolutely beautiful. Yeah, it has a bit of everything, and you know, so much character to it, and the people are, you know, incredibly friendly, and it's, I suppose it's just been weird to kind of see a city like that quiet, really. I think we only kind of had a few weeks where you actually kind of saw quite a few tourists, but still, even from what I've heard, that wasn't even the extent of what it's usually like. So it was something really, really different.
Yes, I'm sure. And even for you to be able to wander around and pop into galleries for a look or just get to know the city, it's an odd time to be trying to do that. So I don't know if you know, where you are on the COVID front over there at the moment. Is it as bad as ever? Are there lockdowns? I don't know. It's hard to keep track of how different countries are faring. I don't know where Florence is.
Yeah. It's been really difficult. For a while, it was pretty open, and they were doing, you know, like a lot of the other kind of main European countries, doing really, really well for a while. And I know, you know, I think for them it was because everything could be outdoors. You know, when you met people, going for dinner, everything was outside, and it was where you wanted to be because it was far too hot to be inside. So they were able to do really well there. But yeah, as of recent, it really, really started to spike. And we were in a similar place to Ireland where, you know, you got put into regions. So like yellow, orange, red. We started off yellow, and within the space of 4 or 5 days, we jumped to red, which essentially then was the same as Ireland. You know, all shops and cafes and restaurants shut, apart from kind of takeaway food. Could only go actually like in your small little area. So, you know, Ireland had a 5-kilometer distance, but this was you could only go a few hundred yards technically, unless you really had to. Obviously, which you could have. I have a supermarket 50 yards down the road, so that was fine with me. And and then obviously was able to go back and forth to training, so that was one thing that kind of didn't stop. But there had been a few problems you know, with it. So a distant staff member had contracted COVID, and so we had to stay in our own little bubble for 10 days and get tested every 2 days. no going out or not even to the supermarket. We could only go back and forth to training, and that was it. So again, that was a really sort of, difficult period. You know, we're kind of constantly going in and out of bubbles, and but thankfully we're still able to train and play the games, really.
So Fiorentina, currently fifth in the table after 10 games. Juventus are top of the table, followed by Milan. These are all the great names that we know of Italian football. Fiorentina finished second last year, and I saw you reach the last 16 in the Champions League. That possibly your the last game you played this side of Christmas. So that looks on the face of it like things are progressing very nicely. How's it been for you? You popped up on my Twitter feed with a goal a couple of weeks back, I saw. Are you getting 90 minutes and getting game time? You mentioned the style of football is a bit different. How has the football gone?
I pretty much have been getting 90 minutes. At times he does change things up, and sometimes... quite drastic. I think we changed the entire starting 11 there, but that's, you know, thankfully we have a big enough squad to kind of do stuff like that. So the Champions League, it went really well for us, and we qualified with a goal in the 96th minute, basically last touch of the game. And you can imagine the reaction of the Italians then. It was dramatic, you know, but their passion is unbelievable. It's kind of nothing I've ever seen before. You know, the speeches and stuff that we get are really stuff you kind of see in the movies, and really from the heart, and you know, and about the city. You know, it's right. It's, you know, if we're not doing it for ourselves today, we do it for the city. And you know, they're a really, really passionate place. I would then say in general the league, we had a great start, but then we definitely had a dip. I think for me, we're maybe not performing how we should be. And even for that Champions League game, as much as I love the last minute goal, we probably should have won it more comfortably over the two legs. So there's definitely still a bit more to go, but there was, you know, a lot of new players that had come in, and then a lot of players that had left. So I still think we're trying to wait for that, you know, that real, real breakthrough moment. And but hopefully there, you know, it's come kind of from that last Champions League game. I think we kind of needed that, you know, that boost, you know, because the player who even scored the goal 3 days previous missed a penalty in the last minute to win us the game. So, you know, a different game. So for me then, you know, that kind of turnaround for her to kind of step up and then score the winner for us to get through in Champions League, it was it was incredible. But yeah, we've still got a long way to go, and I've had a lot of adaptation and trying to just learn the Italian way and then learn the Fiorentina way. And it's but I feel now the last few weeks I've definitely kind of found my feet far more. But I've just been really enjoying the challenge of it and marking the little tricky Italians.
Okay, so that's maybe one of the differences, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the forwards are, they're something else. You know, they're with their back to goal, they are, you know, they're incredible at linking up play or flicking it around you, and, you know, and they're gone already, or a little 1-2, and, you know, or putting it between your legs, doing whatever they can. And yeah, as a defender, unfortunately for them, their reputation is that they like to go to the ground, and it is... It's true, unfortunately. I've already got a red card a good few weeks back now, a couple of months back.
Deserved? That's a yes, move on, yes.
Well, it's not, it's last player back, and she could have gone on to score, but she decided to
hit
take
the deck.
A tumble.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. So I learned a harsh lesson. That was definitely my welcome.
Yeah. So I would say, even without you realizing it now, you're just quicker on your feet. You know what I mean? Your short, sharp steps, that just will just by osmosis come into your game.
Yeah. You really have to be. And I think it's about then reading the game as well, and reading like the body language of players and kind of what they want to do. But yeah, absolutely, kind of in those short situations, you have to be really, really accurate. So your timing has to be right, and your reading of the game, which is something, you know, it's a great kind of, you know, I've always tried to have that to my game, but to then to have it upped And then also in the, you know, in the, what you would call, I still have plenty of years left of me, but the latter stages of my career, to be able to get that sort of time in is really, really important.
So look, you're living a really interesting life, aren't you? You've moved around Europe now, and to live in cities like Florence and London, amazing. So it's working out for sure. But I'm curious, when the partying with Arsenal came, where was your head at there? Like, were you kind of, did you feel like you were cast aside? They didn't want you. Was your confidence low? Were you down about it, or were we happy enough maybe to get away and try something new? Ultimately, I don't know when Florence or Florentina first got in touch, but the parting of the ways with Arsenal, was that a tough one?
Yeah, listen, for me it was really difficult, and that kind of came down to a lot of things. One of the main things was obviously down to COVID, but it was kind of then I didn't get to finish, you know, what I started with them. You know, I was quite aware with Arsenal that in that season, you know, I wasn't playing as much as maybe I would have liked, but I was still really, really enjoying my football, and enjoying the training and you know, and being a part of that squad. And after Christmas, I definitely started to get my, you know, more run of games and really, again, finding my flow. But yeah, so to kind of not be able to finish the season and say goodbye to the club, and the girls, I still haven't seen the girls. Obviously the only one is Katie, you know, off the squad, and then Leonie Meyer, who plays for Germany. You know, they're the only two I've got to see from the, you know, from the team. So I haven't even properly said goodbye to some of my best friends from that team because of the situation. So I think you do kind of, you hold on to that a little bit. And I think that took me a while to kind of get over. And I found it really, really sad, to be honest. Mm. And yeah, listen, I maybe there's some ways that, in that period, I could have been maybe told a bit sooner that I wasn't getting a contract, to be able to try kind of figure something else out. But yeah, we were all in a difficult kind of situation at that stage. And, so for me, I think that was just the saddest thing, kind of not to say goodbye, and, probably slower to move on than what I should be. Mm. So yeah, that was really, really difficult, but I was definitely ready for the next challenge because I wanted to keep playing. And for me, it was just, what was the only thing that was in my mind is find the place, you know, that's good for me, that I'm fit and ready to go with the Irish team. That was my ultimate goal. So then, yeah, to be faced with this sort of challenge, it probably was a little bit of a surprise that I was maybe going abroad. I didn't see it coming, I guess. Mm. And so then when it kind of came up, though, I really just thought about it and could really just start getting into the season straight away. And with COVID, though, again, obviously that's tough to then still be in the unknown, like, about COVID generally in kind of June, July, and then moving to the country that was kind of hit hardest by us, was definitely, I was scared, and I was like, okay, but this is the challenge, and you know, they're set and ready to go and confident that we can keep running, you know, with this league, and that was it. So yeah, just I took it on, and outside of my comfort zone, absolutely the furthest I've been over for a long time, I think, but. I think I weirdly like it, even though at the time you maybe don't, but I think I actually really like that sort of challenge.
So. Yeah, no, I can imagine. You don't tend to regret those things in hindsight. They develop you as a human being. Can't let you go without talking about Ireland. Man, oh man, you're a frustrating bunch to watch. You are just a frustrating bunch.
Apologies.
Yeah. So, I mean, the country, on the upside, country really got behind the team. I think that's the first time I felt it, you know, even just social media, whatever barometer you want to use. And it wasn't just I felt the 20 by 20 thing. It was just front and center on TV, and you started the campaign so well, and there was the Ukraine game at home, and you really thought, God, there's a bit of excitement about this bunch, and they're looking really good. And then I don't need to remind you of Greece or Ukraine away, you know, even that own goal. I suspect that's not something you like to watch too often, all of this stuff. And then, you know, really good account of yourselves against Germany. On the one hand, and this was even in the TV analysis afterwards, the nature of the conversation. On the one hand, you got to acknowledge the progress, and it's there. On the other hand, it's like, come on already. This team is more than good enough to be at championships. So where are you with the disappointment, the frustration versus the acknowledgement that things seem to be going in on the right track?
I'm still kind of in, I suppose, both of those kind of mindsets, essentially, that we should have qualified for me. And that disappointment, is gonna really hurt for a long time. Looking at the group, looking at how we performed, looking at how we really went for it. And just absolutely loved it. It's been some of the most enjoyable kind of international football that I've gotten to play. And like with these players. But maybe, it's so hard to put your finger on the problem. And it's, is it maybe just because we've kind of never experienced being that close before that then maybe we let it kind of get to us. Because there's just those it's the smallest of moments, as you say, the Greece game. If we just really just tighten up and finish that off, we wouldn't be having any sort of this conversation. We'd be saying how amazing and how wonderful it was, So it really is the smallest of things, the smallest of margins that hasn't been able to kind of tip us over the edge that we needed to be. And maybe it is just down to that experience of not playing in those big games. So, maybe for the Ukraine game, feeling that pressure. Even though it kind of, we shouldn't have let it. And it's just really, really hard to take, because you look at the squad and it's fantastic, but obviously then overall the progression, how we've been playing, has been just really, really enjoyable. Vera has given us the license, to actually play, and that hasn't been the case all the time, where you're given that confidence that we've got enough players here that play football with their clubs, that really, really play football, play from the back. And, we still enjoy a long ball, but I think when you see it, it's far more controlled and structured. And when you have the likes of Leanne Kiernan and, Heather Payne on the wings, how can you not use their, their pace, and how can you not use Rihanna's hold up play, and then trying to create space for Denise and Katie to go do their thing. It's one of those where it's just going to hurt a lot. But even just as I said, after the Germany game, it's the progress of the support has been incredible. And that's, for me, that's something I'm going to take away. And it really touched me, and it really hit me hard in this campaign, especially for those games that we couldn't have supporters, but the coverage was fantastic. The good luck messages that we were able to get on social media, and everything like that was incredible, and that's something I'll take forward, and the squad are going to take forward into the next campaign.
Okay, well, listen, Vera Pauw said World Cup 2023 is going to happen, so hopefully it does. In the meantime, we'll just have to get over the Euros of 22 and turn off our TVs. In the meantime, we might nag you again when Champions League comes up. But Louise Quinn, Irish international and Fiorentina player, thanks so much.
Lovely, thanks, Mel.
Cheers, thanks, Louise.
With guilt like your eyes. Ra-ta-ta-ta-ta.